This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
sleeper. Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome on into our Friday, February 21st edition of Sports Talk. Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, bringing you till 7 o'clock tonight. That's when we got the Pelicans taking on the Dallas Mavericks, a 7:30 tip-off in Big D. Got a lot to get to on our show today. The news came out finally. The defensive coordinator role has been filled officially. We've been speculating that Brandon Staley was the favorite to get the gig, and in fact, he did, and pretty soon we'll be connecting with Lorenzo Neal, Chargers legendary fullback, also host of the Believe in Chargers podcast. Help us break things down with Brandon Staley. Also, get a little more insights on Kellen Moore. 4:35, we'll be talking with Michael Giannetti, co-founder and editor of Sport Track. Get a little insight on the Saints salary cap situation. We know it is a big old puzzle that the black and gold need to figure out as they try and get under the cap before the new league year starts. 5:25, getting a little bit of an NFL combine primer since that's kicking off next week. Eric Edholm, the lead draft writer for NFL Media, will be joining us. And then in the 6 o'clock hour, one of our favorites, Odyssey Sports NBA insider Nick Friedell, giving us the lowdown on the Pelicans and the rest of the NBA with just the final stretch of the regular season upon us. Just 27 games left for the Pelicans. It's really not the halfway point.
No. The All-Star game in the NBA comes super late. It's weird, and it's kind of this like sprint to the finish. I think the Pelicans, I don't know, what is a positive finish for the Pelicans for you? It's weird because it's like, I want them to get the number one pick in the draft.
I'm with you, right.
So I've now shifted over from I want entertaining basketball to like, yeah, we can lose these games.
I still want to be entertained, but just fall apart in the last 4 minutes.
Yeah, but that's not entertaining. That's I don't know. Like, I want Cooper Flagg. Like, the best way for this season to go would be next season you have Cooper Flagg in your lineup, right? Like, that's it. That's all you have left. And like, them winning 10 games over the rest of the final, 27, would be the worst-case scenario. So it's just, I don't know. This is why you never want to be in these situations, because you end up –
right,
like, I want to talk about, like, oh, how can this team improve? But then it's like, I don't want them to improve that much.
Right, because each victory takes away that percentage of ping-pong balls you have in the lottery.
And that's not fun. That's not where you want to be. Well, but that's
it's just it's been that kind of season for the Pels, though. You know it.
It's been that kind of life as a Pelicans fan. It seems like every few years, it's like, it seemed like it was going so well. And you know, I go back, like, what do things look like if DeMarcus Cousins doesn't blow up his Achilles on like a hustle play?
Right.
Like, if you remember that moment, the Pelicans were like on fire. They had just beaten the Rockets, or they're in the process of beating the Rockets, a team that was going to be the one seed, I believe, in the West that year. You know, they had Chris Paul and James Harden. You had this kind of Twin Towers thing going with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. You went all in for Cousins, and it was working. He was hustling to get a loose ball after a missed free throw, and then he blows. And then it's like, you know, that changed everything. And I don't know. It just never. I don't feel like they've ever gotten back to that point where it's like I felt like, okay, we got stars, we got a plan. I don't know. It's sad.
That kind of buzz around them.
Yeah, like I was excited about that team, and now I'm not. So we'll see. But maybe they can get healthy. They can do something. But I'm not. It's not a point where I'm thrilled to watch the games at this stage.
Well, hopefully we're thrilled in watching the Saints next season with a new head coach, also a new defensive coordinator. We both have charged ties to the Chargers, and we're now welcoming in a former Chargers fullback and also NFL legend, host of the Believe in Chargers podcast as well, Lorenzo Neal. Definitely appreciate the time. How the heck are you doing, Lorenzo?
Legendary, guys, legendary. I got to ask you guys a question. I'm going to interview you guys. I don't watch a lot of this sport, but the first time last night, I think I watched the whole hockey game. How about that game last night? Canada and the U.S., how about that? They were going after, right?
We were loving it until what happened in overtime.
Yeah, my main suggestion would be if you have the best player on the planet on the other team, someone should be near him in overtime. I don't know. That's my idea. I don't know a ton about hockey.
Think? Hey, you know what? You're hired. Hey, you're hired. Especially in overtime, it just seemed like the United had the momentum. They were getting shots at the goal, and they just couldn't get out. I was like, oh, God. So, but anyways, yeah, I love what you guys are doing there and then down there and all. And y'all don't realize that was the first place I got drafted, 84th pick overall, 87th pick overall, to the New Orleans Saints. And that's where I played 4 years of my young career with Dalton Hilliard and Sam Mills, Ricky Jackson, the Dome Patrol. So, Jim Morris. So it all started for me in big Louisiana.
We also get to work with the legendary Bobby Hebert, and he talks a lot about those days for sure.
Oh, yeah. Bobby's amazing, man. I love Bobby. Bobby's got that voice, right, guys? It keeps you going.
Looking at the hire just recently, we'll get into with the defensive coordinator, Brandon Staley. Just wondering what you can tell us about his time with the Chargers. Obviously, things didn't end the way that he wanted to over there. But just what kind of defense maybe we can expect him to bring to this Saints squad?
Well, I think you've got to be smart to play in this defense. I mean, Brandon Staley, you saw what he did with the Rams. They were able to win a Super Bowl. We know that he can coach X's and O's, and he's a guy I think is a great defensive coordinator. Some people question maybe is he a fit for a head coach? And I think that's why when you look at what the Saints have done, when you go out and you hire, Kellen Moore, where was he come from? Think about San Diego. He got the Chargers, the L.A. Chargers. Excuse me. But that's where he was with Coach. So you have two guys that have some familiarity, and you brought in a head coach that was the head coach that you worked with. You brought him in. Why? You brought him in that he can also teach you how to be a head coach in Kellen Moore. So that is going to be a great confidant for Coach Kellen Moore that you guys hired as the head coach. I think that you're going to have a great working relationship with him and Staley.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on Staley as a defensive coach? Because I think people talk about Brandon, it's all going to go back to, oh, well, the head coaching tenure didn't go that well. And, we saw with Dennis Allen, he was a great defensive coordinator. He got the head coaching job. It didn't go particularly well. But, not every great defensive coach is meant to be a head coach. It's just the skill sets are very different. I think a lot of people look at it and be like, well, he failed as a coach. I'm like, well, actually, in 2020, he had the Rams. He installed a defense over Zoom. They couldn't even meet. And he had that team as the number one defense in the NFL. So there's a lot of actual success that you can point to on the defensive side of the ball. So what are your thoughts on his, what the type of scheme he runs, the type of defense he puts on the field?
Yeah, I think that you guys know that offense entertains, but defense wins championships. And he's going to be a 4-3 guy. He's got to go four down. You've seen what he was able to do. He did a great job with the Rams. You said when you have players, look, if all things being equal, players are going to make plays, but coaches make decisions to help determine how in the game. You got to have some players that execute. You show me a great coach, I'll tell you what, he's got some great players. All I think about, Patrick Mahomes and Brady. When you got a great coach, yeah, coaches get a lot of praise, but when you have great players around, it makes it happen. And Staley is a good coach. I think that he's one of those coaches. He knows X and O's and have a defense that's going to be a solid defense if you can get him the right guys to execute his plan. Look no further than a lot of – look at Spagnuolo. Look at Spags over there in Kansas City. Not a great head coach, but look what Spags has done as a defensive coordinator for Kansas City Chiefs. Look at Vic Fangio. Hey, this guy, they motorboated to the Kansas City Chiefs, he wasn't a great head coach. I knew Vic. Vic spent days in New Orleans. Knew him at the Niners, a defensive coordinator. Look how well. Took the Niners to a Super Bowl. Lost to the Hardball Bowl. So you got to look at certain guys. They're great defensive defensive coordinators, but they're just not great head coaches. Look at North Turner. The list goes on, guys, that there's a lot of guys out there, and I think you got a good one in Staley, who is a great defensive, a really good defensive coordinator, and just the question's still out about being a head coach.
Yeah, you mentioned with the, you know, not everybody is a great head coach. We're kind of expecting that to happen with Dennis Allen moving on to Chicago, probably ignite that Bears defense over there after spending time here. Looking at the youth now movement with this coaching staff with the Saints, what were your impressions with that one season that Kellen Moore did spend with the Chargers?
Yeah, I thought that you saw that he absolutely, Justin Herbert loved Kellen Moore. I mean, this guy comes from Boise. He was a Boise player and watched him play in college. And he's just one of those guys that he knows X's and O's, a great offensive coordinator, a great offensive mind. He had a great year with Justin Herbert. He is going to come in there and he is going to help Carr. He's going to help whoever is at the quarterback position. Hopefully it's Derek Carr, Fresno State legend as well. So I hope it's him, but Kellen Moore is going to make sure the quarterback is going to be successful. He's going to get the ball out of his hands, going to have the quarterback knowing where to go with the ball. You guys got to find offensive coordinator. The verdict is still out, but can he be a coach, a head coach? But you know what? You got to start somewhere. There's a lot of guys that just first-time head coaches that can do pretty well. So I think Kellen Moore is a great offensive mind. You're going to see, saw what he did. Wherever he goes, he has success, especially with the offensive side of the ball. But now you have a head coach, but also now offensive coordinator. So this is going to depend what he does. Is he going to be willing to give up the rings to another offensive coordinator? Because now he's a head coach. And I think that's one of those reasons also that he brought in Coach Staley to help him micromanage and understand what it takes to be a head coach.
Yeah, Lorenzo, you just brought it up. I was going to ask you, you know, as a Fresno State guy, there's like some Fresno State connections here. Right? You know, even Jordan Mims, a running back for Fresno State, obviously Derek Carr.
Yeah,
Doug Nussmeier,
yes.
People might not know, Doug Nussmeier actually spent a year as an offensive coordinator for Fresno State. So there's a lot of Bulldog pride in New Orleans these days. And so I'm curious, you know, obviously I'm sure you've followed Derek Carr for a long time. You know, what are your thoughts on him as a starting quarterback and what he's done and where he is at this point? Because that's going to be a big question for the Saints. It's a big cap hit. You're changing coaching regimes. Do you try to move on at the quarterback position? Do you stick with him? What are your thoughts on Derek?
Well, I think right now, if you're going to get someone in the draft, is he going to be ready? That's the question. And that's what's tough. Because if you get someone, say, okay, we're going to go all in and get a rookie. Is he going to be ready for that first year? You need a Derek Carr because he's a guy that's not necessary. There's different type of quarterbacks, Mahomes. You look at Josh Allen. You look at, you know, when you think about Cincinnati's, the Bengals, you watch Joe Burrows, Joe Cool. Look around the league. There are certain type of guys that are game changers, and then there's game managers. There are certain types of guys. There's a difference between a thermostat and a thermometer. See, a thermometer, all it does is just measure temperature. Thermostat, it regulates temperature. I don't know if Derek Carr is that type of player. I know he's a good player. He's not a great quarterback. He's not an elite quarterback, but he can win games, but everything needs to be good around him. So that's the thing. If you're looking for a guy, if that's the thing you're looking for, Carr, then you don't have that in Derek Carr. Now, you have a guy that can win us. I'm not saying he can go out and carry a team, but he can. He's not that type of quarterback, but he can win it. He's good enough to win a Super Bowl if everything around him is good.
Yeah, you know, I had someone say this to me once, and I think it lands in this situation, which is like no one gets excited about the 15th best quarterback in the NFL until you don't have a top 15 quarterback, and then that's the only thing you need, and suddenly you don't have it, right?
Right. You know what? You hit the nail right on the head. What do you want, Geno Smith? I mean, what are you going to upgrade? You know, and no due disrespect, but there's just a lot of guys out there. They're just guys. You have a guy at the top, like you said, top 15 quarterback. He's not the top, the elitist of the elitist, but he can win. But if you go out there now and just say, hey, we're going to get rid of him, you're going to take some growing pains either or, no matter what. So do you go draft a guy and say, look, a year or two, or do you say, look, we're going to rebuild and start all over all the time?
Lorenzo, I want to ask you about the fullback position. It seems like you guys are a dying breed lately in the NFL. What's going on with the you know, overall, and do you think there's still a place in this league? I think we've seen it. You know, we need you big guys helping pave the way out there, and it just seems like a position that's really been a sought after, like not even thought about anymore.
Yeah, it, you're absolutely right. But I think when you look at Kyle Juszczyk and look at some of the guys that played the position, it's not that it's not a glamorous position. You understand that. And to play fullback, you got to be different. And I think that's the biggest thing. When you're a fullback, you got to be able to move people. And that's what I did. When I went out there and you saw certain guys, you watched the, you know, not just myself, but you look at guys like Sam Gash and Great the Moose and Moose Johnson, you know, Larry Sinners. You watch guys that got downhill. Was four, you know, you guys had one, Terrell Suggs, I mean, Suggs, that Smith, the T. Smith that played there a while back. You got to have guys that want to go in there and move guys out of the way. And I think it's going to start to come back because you saw this year two running backs put the running back position back on the map, and which was long overdue. So I hopefully, with that being said, the fullback position starts to come back this way, because I'm telling you, man, back in the day when I played, you guys knew. I mean, Larry Sinners, you think about Tony Richardson, Camden City, you know, all these great fullbacks that you had, Mike Allstott. We need the fullbacks. We need to make fullbacks great again. Juszczyk is still carrying the torch so for us, guys. Cal Juszczyk's going to carry that torch.
Awesome stuff, Lowe. Definitely appreciate the time. Thanks so much, and hopefully be seeing you down here soon enough in New Orleans.
Absolutely. We'll do it again soon, guys. Cheers.
Thanks, man.
Lorenzo Neal, former Saints Chargers fullback and amongst other teams as well, also does the Host in Believe in Chargers podcast. Got a little inside info on Brandon Staley and Kellen Moore. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. Come back with more right after this, so stay tuned on WWL. I want to remind you folks, if you love fishing or hunting, you can't miss The Outdoors Guy. Don Dubuque, early Saturday mornings here on WWL. Don's The Outdoors Guy, who spends decades fishing and hunting the woods, swamps, marshes, and bayous of the southeast Louisiana. Just catch Louisiana's great outdoors with Don Dubuque tomorrow and every Saturday morning, 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. on WWL. We're going to take a break, come back with more sports talk, get into a little bit of salary cap talk after this, so stay tuned on WWL.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Back here on Sports Talk, happy to welcome in now Michael Jannetty, co-founder and editor at SpotRack. Michael, how you been doing? I know it's been a crazy time of year right now as we get ready going into the NFL Combine.
Yeah, doing well. It's certainly starting to ramp up here with some late Friday transactions, but we love it. We're eating it up.
Looking at the Saints situation, I don't know if it's as confusing and hard for you to dissect as it is for us. You look at it, and it's been a bit of a mishmash for these last couple of seasons with this bunch. And it just, you know, every single season they're doing something to try and get back over the cap. Right now with the new projected salary cap for next season, where do the Saints sit right now?
Yeah, the best guess is around -48, -47. We'll see where that final number lands, but that's probably a pretty close to accurate estimate as to where things stand right now, which isn't great because, as you sort of alluded to, this is one of those years where you can't just kind of plug and play and move some things around and make it all work. They're at a point now where so many of these contracts are at a stuck moment that you can't just even start releasing players and free up the space that you need. So there's going to be some pain, I think some real maybe eye raisers here over the next couple of weeks to see what happens. And that's certainly starting at the quarterback position all the way down.
Yeah, Michael, before we go on, you know, the projections for the salary cap are always interesting to me because it's very much a projection until we find out the real number, but it's based on something, and sometimes it comes in higher, sometimes it comes in lower. You don't really see it coming lower that often, but what can you just explain where those projections come from? Like, what are the data points you're looking at when you're trying to figure out what the cap is going to be next year? How much is it going to go up? Because that obviously changes a lot in terms of what because teams have to plan for their cap next year, and they have to try to figure out what it is the same way everyone else does.
Yeah, exactly, right? So we obviously track year to year, and we've got the percent changes and things like that. That's sort of what we base it on, right? That there was a while there before the COVID years where there were a lot of adjustments that it was a pretty natural 7 to 7.5% increase. So we could pretty much get within 1 to 2 million early on in the off season, and then things would finalize as we got about this time every year. And then of late, right, the last 3 to 4 years, especially since the COVID stuff has been paid back and all of that's gone away to some degree, things have really exploded. And that's gambling, that's huge revenue, streaming, right, Thursday Night Football, all the things that have been added in, Christmas football, all these added revenues have really just forced the hand to the point of where now if it used to be 7%, it's looking like 9.5 to 10% might be the new normal, which means – you know, if we're going $280 million this year, we're going to be at or above $300 million next year, which is pretty wild when you know where we started from.
Derek Carr is obviously the big talk around here. There's a situation with him, and, you know, there's the possibility of restructuring him, but that's going to end up adding more years, and I don't think the team wants to do that. The talk is about possibly releasing him post June 1st to save on some money there, or you know, trying to find a trade partner with another team to deal him away as well. But can you lay out the Saints situation, the cap situation with quarterback Derek Carr for us?
It's a tough one because obviously all those options are somewhat on the table. You know, I think he's a slight trade candidate based on what he was able to do over the past couple of seasons here and where he might be headed. But even that isn't great, right? Because of the guarantee that sits here and what might have to happen. So as of right now, there's $10 million guaranteed for the upcoming season. That significantly changes on March 14th when another $30 million of that locks in. So time is of the essence. There's a hard deadline as to what's going to happen here. The post-June 1st makes sense. The problem with that is you got to carry this cap number until June 1st, and then you can certainly cut bait and split this dead cap up over the next couple of seasons. But that's the biggest problem with this is it doesn't alleviate the problem right now unless you can sit down with him and restructure this contract for the purposes of releasing him to make sure that you know both sides have a bit of an out here. But I know that they've approached him before about pay cuts and things like that, and it hasn't gone well. So I'm not sure there's a relationship in place to help them out in this regard. They may have to, at some point in time here, find somebody who's interested from a trade perspective and do whatever it takes to make that happen. Because that is, from a cap and obviously from a roster perspective, the best approach is to get him out before June 1st and free up around $11, $12 million, even if it means they have to eat some of that guaranteed money for the 2025 season.
Yeah, the only issue is, you know, we saw this play out with the Raiders. He has a no-trade clause, so he could be like, eh, not happening. But, you know, I am curious. I want your perspective on, you know, obviously the Saints are kind of the poster child for how they manage the cap in terms of, you know, converting base salary into bonus structures and pushing it out over however many years and blah, blah, blah. You know, they're not the only team that does it. It just seems like in a lot of cases, you know, when it's the Eagles that are doing it, I see terms like financial alchemy. I think we may have lost. I think we may
he have dropped out. Charlie's going to try and get him back. So, yeah, hold your question. You don't have all to right. keep going into it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can kind of say it. But, like, yeah, it's interesting because when we talk about the salary cap, it's like if when a team does what the Saints do and it goes well,
it's brilliant.
We use different words.
Yeah.
Right? We use – I saw a term we used called – is he back?
He is back.
All right. Michael, did you get any of my question before? Should I start over?
Started over, sorry.
All right. So I'd like your perspective on, you know, the Saints and how they manage the cap in terms of, you know, they're kind of the poster child for those people will say kicking the can, quote unquote, and, you know, converting money from a base salary into a bonus structure, moving it out over however many years they can, void years, all that stuff. And the interesting thing to me is, you know, they're not the only team that does it, But when it's going well, there's a lot nicer terms that are used for it. I saw somebody use the term financial alchemy to describe how the Eagles are operating and how it all worked out. Man, they got a Super Bowl. It's great. And no one's really thinking about, okay, 5 years from now, how is this going to look? Because they got it done. You know, the Saints, they didn't get it done. They got to the NFC Championship. There was the worst no-call in the history of sports, and they didn't get there. So we kind of view it as a failure. But, you know, it is kind of a, you know, when the Rams go all in and they win, we don't talk about, wow, was that worth it? Because, of course, it was worth it. And now, but the problem is it's hard to pull that back. It's hard to just pull the cord and start from scratch. And that's where the Saints are right now of like, man, you know, we didn't get that full reward. So now was it worth it at all? But either way, you got to figure out how to navigate around it. So I'm just curious where you land on that strategy as a whole, because it does help you compete. But then it can definitely lead to some problems down the line.
Yeah, it's a great way to look at it. And there's certainly more and more teams jumping on this bandwagon, and they have for the past couple of seasons, right? What the Buccaneers did during the Brady era was uberly aggressive in this regard. Void years, you know, massive bonuses, massive conversions, everything you're talking about here. So teams sort of pick and choose, I think, right now when they're going to do it. The Saints have just been one of those teams that have done it annually for over a decade now, and you're right. When you don't have that Super Bowl hanging over you, it continues to look like you're just beating the dead horse to a certain degree, right? And that's now amplified with the fact that there's many pieces on this roster that I think the team would like to move on from, and the aggressiveness of the cap gymnastics is disallowing them from being able to do that very easily, right? So that starts with the Carr situation, like we just talked about. You know, the Taysom Hill contract, the Kamara contract, the Cam Jordan contract, all of these players that are at least getting towards the end of their tenure here, maybe their careers as a whole, it's not just as easy as saying, let's just release these players. That's why teams don't do this on a regular basis, because they want the control to be able to say at any point in time, even the biggest players, even the highest cap hits on this roster have to be flexible enough for us to have a decision on every March. And the Saints don't have that ability right now. So I'm a proponent of being aggressive, especially when you know you have value somewhere on your roster, whether that's the quarterback position, whether that's with a couple of defensive rookies that you hit like the Rams are in currently right now. I'm a big proponent of that. I think the Saints have taken things a little bit too far when they've gone from 1 to 15 and 16 with their contracts being this aggressive with the cap situation, but they're going to have to go through 2 to 3 years of really serious purging now to get themselves back to square one, and then we'll see what they do with the next iteration.
Yeah, I think something I've said to Steve a few times is like, I think where you really suffer in that scenario is not necessarily the players you have around that you want. It's the players you have around that you'd like to move on from that you can't because it doesn't make sense to do so. And you end up keeping guys, like I look at a Michael Thomas, a guy they probably would have moved on from the Saints would probably a year before they did. And then you saw that really fall apart. But I do want to kind of sharp pivot here to something that's similar, but I'm sure you have feelings about as well. In baseball, there's no salary cap. So you can defer money, but it's a way different situation because it's all guaranteed. And you see these crazy deals coming in with, you know, like Shohei Ohtani with all that deferred money. It's insane. You know, and for a long time, it was like, you know, we make jokes about like Bobby Bonilla Day and like, you're still paying this guy. He hasn't played in forever. It feels like to me, you know, we're setting up a scenario where 20 years from now is going to be Bobby Bonilla Day for like 50 different guys and they're not playing anymore. They're still raking in cash. But does it even matter? Because we're just getting upset about a billionaire's balance sheet. You know, but to me, it just seems to be stacking the deck more and more and more in favor of the have it teams versus the don't have it teams in terms of the salary, or terms of deep yeah. pockets. So how do you view that situation? Because it just seems so bonkers to me that you can sign a guy. And even like Alex Bregman's deal this year, it has a bunch of backloaded money that, you know, he's probably not going to see until he retires. I'm just curious, what are your opinions on that iteration of current Major League Baseball contracts?
It's been around forever, right? I've been doing this for 20 plus years here, and the deferred money's been there, right? The Nationals have been big with it, the Angels to some degree. Have been doing this for quite a while. So it's been there, but it's been kind of buried under the woodworks. And the Dodgers just blew the doors off this thing with the Ohtani contract specifically and then everything that's followed. My take is this. The biggest issue I have with it isn't so much that it's a pay-later structure and that, you know, Shohei Ohtani won't see $680 million until he's 40, 45 years old. To me, that's just accounting. The problem with it is that teams benefit from the present day value, right? So there isn't a salary cap, but there is a luxury tax. And if the Dodgers had the same rules as everybody else and the deferred contracts weren't on the books, their luxury tax bill would be upwards of $700, $800 million this season alone, just for this season, because of the bill that would be in place. But because Shohei Ohtani's $700 million is actually $460 million today, they get a $46 million tax salary instead of a $70 million tax salary. So there's a salary cap, there's a cap hit feel when you think about it from that regard, and they are getting significant benefits from doing things the way they're doing it. And they're doing it not only with Ohtani, they're doing it with Tommy Edman, right, and Teoscar Hernandez, and players that, you know, should be simple 1-2 year contracts, but have become complicated and become massive benefits for the Dodgers. So I don't like that they get the win in that regard. I'm just not so much worried about the cash part of it.
Michael, just curious too, one last thing with Derek Carr. Do you think there's a scenario where the Saints just stand pat and write out the contract they have with him already?
Look, I sat here on my roster management tool for about an hour today trying to get ready for this thing. And the only way forward is if they can't actually trade him, if they have to keep him, the only way for them to get cap compliant by March 12th, in my opinion, is to actually process the full salary cap conversion on Derek Carr again. And I know that's just adding more of this to next year's conversation, but I don't see a way that they don't do that and don't do it with Taysom Hill and don't extend Cam Jordan out a year just to lower that cap hit. So I know that it's just burying the hole even further, but I have a feeling he's going to be on this roster and they're going to convert that salary just like they did last season.
Yeah, I think it would be something in the range of $30 million that they can restructure and move forward, and that definitely takes a huge chunk out of what they would need to do, and it has to be weighing on their minds at some level of like, there's a simple way we can do this and a really complicated way we can do this, and we'll see. I'm just curious, as you go around the NFL and you look at all these quarterback contracts, right? And last year was crazy, and it was just one up. It does feel like there is kind of a middle class of quarterbacking that's reemerging in kind of the Geno Smiths, the Derek Carrs, even the Daniel Jones contract, which, you know, seems way overvalued now. It was right there in the middle. I'm just curious, what do you see as kind of the future of quarterback contracts? Because it feels like if we continue at the rate that we're going,
you got to watch out. Wide receivers are catching up,
right? It just seems like how do you fill a roster out if you're paying a $30 million wide receiver, a $60 million quarterback? You know, can you have an offensive line? Can you have a running back? But where do you see that kind of market going?
Yeah, there's no question. We had a good little run there, right, with Baker Mayfield and Geno Smith and Daniel Jones, and it's an important offseason to make sure that conversation can continue, right? Because Brock Purdy should not be a $60 million quarterback. He should be in this conversation we're talking about. Sam Darnold, same thing. He should be in this same conversation. So as long as we have a pretty healthy middle class, I'm not overly concerned because, you know, at the same time, in the next couple of weeks here, I think the Bills might give Josh Allen $65 million a year. So that's not going away because we're talking about $280, $300 million salary caps for the entire league here. So the league is keeping up. That is the position that will certainly continue to push as long as there are superstars. And I do think there's another crop here about to, you know, grow into it with the C.J. Strouds and maybe even the Jaden Daniels over the next couple of seasons. So I don't see it slowing down. Is it damaging to the rest of the rosters? Of course it is, right? We've seen this in basketball to a certain degree, and things have had to slide down a little bit. But as long as there's a healthy middle class and that becomes the dominating force and we have these outlier contracts at the top, I think we'll be just fine going forward.
Michael Jannetty, definitely appreciate the time, man. Thanks for making sense of all these crazy salary cap numbers with us. Appreciate you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, man.
Michael Jannetty, co-founder and editor at SpotTrack. You can check out all his work there. Great stuff if you want to dive deep into the numbers of salary capdom. And that's why I was like, I need him to come on and explain some of these things to me. Because you start reading it, and it's like, I cannot comprehend.
No, it was funny because you booked it, and I was just like, oh, that's great, because I've been going to this guy's website for years. I'm glad to finally get the chance to talk to him, because, like, anytime I have I get questions on Twitter all the time. Oh, what happens if they do this? That's where I go.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, click, click, click. All right, I have an answer for you. It's a great website.
Our answer right now is taking a break. We'll be back with more sports talk. Stay tuned on WWL right after this. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Talking a little hockey right now, guys. Last night, unfortunately, Canada winning in overtime 3-2 over the U.S. ESPN had 9.3 million viewers for the Four Nations final. That makes it the most watched NHL game in 30-plus years.
Is it technically an NHL game?
Yeah, because it was their All-Star break. I don't think they can go back to the old format now anytime soon.
Yeah, I guess not. I didn't realize it would technically be an NHL game. More like an Olympics.
Yeah, it was like a mini Olympics for sure.
Yeah,
and I think that's what riled everybody up when you have the countries versus each other.
Well, it was a little more than just that. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely something. You know, I wasn't even really aware of it until it started. And then, you know, all the fights and everything, it was kind of fun. But, you know, definitely it got everyone talking about hockey. So if not, no one's talking about the NBA right now. Let's put it that way.
They're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. Be back with more sports talk, so stay tuned right after this on this frigid Friday right here on WWL. What's going on, everybody? It is Friday, and Jeff's rocking and rolling here in the studio, gearing up for the parades this weekend. Hope you're staying warm. LSU baseball in action today. Had a 4 o'clock start taking on Omaha. The Tigers up 2-0 in that matchup. They're in the bottom of the fourth inning currently. We'll have some LSU action for you over the weekend. The Purple and Gold will play. It started today, 4 o'clock, on our sister station, the Bet 92.9 and 1350 AM, also the Odyssey app. Tomorrow there's going to be a doubleheader because there's going to be bad weather on Sunday, so they bump things up. There'll be a tomorrow noon game, pregame 11:30. That's also on the Bet 92.9 FM and 1350 AM and the Odyssey app. Unfortunately, game 3, which will start at 5, we cannot carry because we'll have the LSU basketball game and we can't have two LSU streams going at the same time. So we'll have that second matchup
like
for you on our
a
sister
law
station.
Of the universe.
Well, they can't send us both for whatever
I
reason.
Understand.
We haven't been able to work that out.
My question is, if you sweep Omaha,
yeah,
is that a good omen for the season? Or will that be like, oh, we already got Omaha, as Charlie says. I think that is. I think it's a good omen, huh?
It couldn't hurt.
Yeah. I don't know. That's all I have to say.
Tigers 4-0 right now, and yeah, that would get them to 7-0 on the season. They also have a game Monday that was rescheduled. They're going to be playing Nichols after the cold weather canceled that the other night. So the Tigers have 4 games in a row before getting a break.
Yeah, I guess, and Charlie, I'm curious. You're number 2 in the country right now. Are they a legit number 2? Do we think that LSU is like a top 3 team in baseball this year? Or are they just getting a lot more credit than maybe they deserve right now because they're LSU? Charlie, do you have an opinion on this subject?
They obviously haven't been tested yet, but I think they are. Okay. I think they're a top 5 team in the country. Maybe top 3, we'll see. But the SEC is always loaded. So once you get into conference play, you'll really start to test yourself. But the depth on the mound is what makes them so enticing this year, guys. Yep. Now, their offense is a little bit concerning to me. I know that they've been lighting teams up early on, but you're not expecting Derek Curiel to still hit 560 once you get out of non-conference play.
Is that unrealistic?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, not even Dylan Cruz could do that. But I do love their pitching staff this year. I've been raving about it since, you know, they first stepped on the mound with Cade Anderson throwing Friday night against Purdue Fort Wayne. I mean, he's been awesome today, too. I think that they have pitching to match up with anybody, and pitching is what wins.
Yeah, the big thing for me, too, is definitely I had faith in the starters and also even the relievers this Tiger team had. But the question was, what's going to happen with the bats? And we'll see what happens when SEC play starts and they get really tested.
Exactly. So, you know, we'll see. I want to see how Daniel Dickinson does as well in SEC play, because he's playing a lot of the same type of competition that he played at Utah Valley right now. And he's looked really good early on. Same thing with like a freshman in Derek Curiel. I mean, this is his first college baseball action. He looks awesome, but once you get to face some SEC arms, granted, I do think LSU has one of the best rotations and just pitching staffs in the SEC, and that's going to play anywhere.
Yeah, I think there's also any time you're coming off a title, I think it's natural for a team to get a little tighter, to feel a little more pressure. Everyone's gunning for you. They're not going to have that issue this year. I mean, they're obviously going to be a top-ranked team, so they'll have people gunning for them. But I don't know. Like any team that's coming off that and is like, oh, can you go back-to-back? It's really difficult to deliver on those expectations. And I think you can play a little freer this season for these guys, and we'll see. But because we were having a lot of these same conversations last year, right? There was just as much hype around this team last year, and they just didn't deliver on it. They had injuries, you know, that never helps, especially on the pitching staff. So, yeah.
Sticking with college, wondering if you guys saw the story about Miami's quarterback Carson Beck and his girlfriend, Miami basketball player Hannah Cavender. They both had cars stolen from their residence. But when you – that's not the real story to me. When you look at what cars were stolen, Carson Beck had a Mercedes and Lamborghini that was taken, and Cavender, her Range Rover, was stolen. And I get it. It's the age of NIL. But how the heck – can you have a Lamborghini and a Mercedes?
Because professional college football players make a lot of money these days, Steve. Well, it's funny because, you know, if this had happened 10 years ago, you'd ask that question, be like, something weird's going on. Like, I remember, I will never forget, there was a story, I was watching ESPN, and they were talking about Terrell Pryor and Ohio State, and there was all these things. I think it was when they got in trouble for, like, selling autographs or something like that. And yeah. Jim Tressel, I believe, was the head coach. And it was just funny because they were talking about, like, the Ohio State denies these allegations of blah, 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 blah. And in the background, you see Terrell Pryor walk out and get into, like, a 350Z and just gun it and fly. And it was like, wait. Like, yeah, he's not getting paid, but he can afford this, like, $120,000 car.
How did he get that?
Anyway, now at least we can be honest about, like, yeah, he just got paid a lot of money to go to Miami, right? Like, why do you think he's in Miami? Because they paid him. They probably gave him a Lamborghini. Like, that's probably why he has it. That's why he left it unlocked in his front yard, because he was like, I don't even know where to put this thing. I don't have a garage. Anyway, so, yeah. Well, there's that, and then did you see the whole story about all the NFL players? There was this, like, Chilean rings, like, breaking into their houses and stuff, and they got caught because they were, like, posting about it, bragging on Instagram.
I know Mahomes had his house recently broken into. Is that part of it?
I think Joe Burrow was part of it,
too. Oh, yeah, that too, right?
Yeah, and so it was, like, this organized ring, you know, robbing NFL quarterbacks and NFL players, and they got caught because they were posting about it on social media.
That's ridiculous.
Very 2025.
To begin with, story. I thought it was a ballsy move, because you got to figure these athletes have high tech security at their houses.
But you know when they're not there.
That's just true. Looking at the scoreboard, is now 3-0 LSU over Omaha. Still in the bottom of the fourth inning there. We'll be keeping tabs on the Tigers throughout the show. Pelicans basketball back tonight after the All-Star break. And man, I don't know, it just seemed like an extended All-Star break this year. Maybe because I didn't watch any of the skills or the game itself.
Yeah, probably because you took it as a complete break from the game of basketball, like most other people did. And it's only underscored by that fact that everyone was paying attention to the NHL's All-Star break. Everyone. We're all talking about it. I did not anticipate coming on here and talking about hockey, but I watched that game last night. And I was like, I got to talk about this. And the reason is because you go watch those games, those NHL, the Four Nations games, and you know the difference? And PK Subban talked about this on Get Up, I want to say, and he was right. Like, the reason that you want to watch that, and everyone turns on the All-Star game, and then immediately is like, what else is on?
Right.
Because you watch the NHL game, and these guys are out there playing their, you know, their tails off. Like, they care. Like, they
throwing their bodies against the boards.
They are going.
No one's taking it easy.
100 out of 100, and you can see that. You can feel that. The energy is there. The intensity is there. You go and watch the NBA All-Star game, and it's like, oh, I wonder if Kyrie Irving can get hit a crossover against Victor Wembanyama, who now is, like, done for the year because he has deep vein thrombosis, which is crazy. Hopefully he's okay. But, like, that's the difference. The NHL players were all in on that experience, and so it became basically like an Olympic event. And Canada is like, well, this is our game. We can't lose this game, right? It'd be like, and I guess if Canada came in here and played a game against the NBA stars from the USA, yeah, we'd be like, if we lose to Canada, that's a bad. This is our game. So I don't know. I think if you're the NBA and you're watching what happened with the NHL and all the attention that's being paid to the NHL, and you're not looking at that and saying, we got to do something like that. Now, maybe not the exact same thing, but there's a lot of really good Canadian players. You probably could have a Canada versus USA dynamic, and it would work. The problem is, and this is the other thing we talked about, there's so much money on the line in the NBA that, like, say, you want Shea Gilgeous-Alexander to lead that Canadian team against Team USA. He goes out there and sprains his ankle, and suddenly the Thunder season is thrown off, and that impacts, because it comes so late in the year, if that impacts the Thunder's chance to go win a title, even though they're the best team in the NBA, and that's not going to fly with the owners. Whereas I think the NHL, nothing but they gain everything from the attention. Like, they want that attention, especially here. So I don't know. That's not what I intended to come on and talk about. But, like, that's the difference. You watch those games, and the NHL players are going all out. and you watch the NBA All-Star game, and these players are just like, hey, cool, fun.
Chucking it up from half court.
Yeah, well, oh, 180 points? Cool, yeah, let's do it.
Well, anyway. The skills competition, too, even when you have, you know, the slam dunk competition used to be must-watch for me with Dominique Wilkins, Michael Jordan, and the stars taking part in. Nowadays, you don't even know who's in it.
I feel like we've reached. Yeah, I think you need to have the stars do it, and that's the problem. Is the stars kind of don't care, right? Like I mean, Mac McClung have a ball, right? He's won 3 years in a row. Mac McClung,
woo.
Fantastic,
yeah,
great. That's who I'm here for. A guy who doesn't even play in the NBA.
He's just he's helping promote the G League, Jeff.
Yeah, great. Fantastic. That's what I want. I want the G League. That's why I'm tuning in to the dunk contest. Plus, I do feel like we have reached the pinnacle of like what a dunk can be. I just feel like there's no new ground we can cover. We've
jumped over people, over cars.
Yeah, like what are we doing? What it has to be like you know, Dwight Howard put a cape on and like dunked from like 5 feet away, and I was like, hey, cool.
I remember when D. Brown, you know, he covered his eyes.
Yeah, Nate Robinson was fun because he's so small. You know, but like this, if you're not going to put the stars in it, it's not worth watching.
We're going to do is take a break right now. When we get back, we'll get into some NFL Combine talk, since that's cranking up next week, starting Thursday over in Indianapolis. Eric Edholm, the lead writer of NFL Media, draft writer, I should say, for NFL Media, will join us right after this break. Stay tuned on WWL. Get into some pigskin football talk right after this on WWL. We are post-Super Bowl, but, you know, football season never ends. We got the NFL Combine cranking up next week to help us talk about that and the upcoming NFL Draft. Eric Edholm, lead draft writer for NFL Media. Thank you so much, Eric, for the time. How you been doing?
I'm doing all right. What's up?
Doing great, man. You stirred the pot down here for sure the other day, putting out your article with Shador Sanders, landing spots, seven teams likely to pick the Colorado QB, and putting the New Orleans Saints in that number. Tell us about that.
Yeah, all right. There's this little thing we do where it's the off season and we kind of, you know, cast some ideas out there and see what sticks. I mean, we're at the point in the off season where we don't have a lot of information about what the Saints' plans are right now, right?
Right.
And they have to create some plans because there's a lot of work to be done that affects the offense, the defense, the quarterback position, you know, all these things. There's, you know, you know, as laudatory as Kellen Moore might have been about Derek Carr, he also didn't say, yeah, he's my week one starter. They haven't, you know, proclaimed that yet. So that leaves the door open. I mean, obviously, if you look at the reality of the situation and some tough cuts coming and some free agents walking and, you know, a little bit of a reboot here, then I think you have to at least consider the first round quarterback option. But I also admit that that's not the most likely spot.
Yeah, and I guess with Shador, he's probably the guy in the top half of the first round that I have the least idea of, okay, where might he go? Because, you know, we're talking about, hey, could he be there at 9? Yeah. Could he go at 3? Yeah. Could he go in the second round? Yeah, I genuinely don't know. I'm just curious, what's your read on what his draft stock actually is? Because this is the time of year where I feel like there's like a lot of noise about like, oh, he's a first rounder, he's a second rounder. And then suddenly it's like, oh, okay, Bo Nix is going 12th overall. And I didn't see that coming 3 months ago. So where are you at? Where are you on Shador right now?
Yeah, and I think just as parallels, and I'm not comparing them as prospects, a couple years ago in the Kenny Pickett, Malik Willis draft, it was sort of viewed as if those two were the top two guys. Now, clearly there was enough suspicion with Malik where he ended up falling around 3. I mean, there were plenty of people who had him in first-round mocks, and, you know, I'm trying to think of the other one. Yeah, Will Levis. You know, Will Levis was a guy who populated the top 10 of some people's mocks, ended up going 33rd. So, yeah, like if you told me right now, I can look into the future and tell you Shador is going to be a second-round pick, it wouldn't be the most stunning thing of all time. So that's the other thing. I mean, yeah, I think there's a good chance he could go in round one, given how many teams right now appear to need quarterbacks. But what if, you know, there's some creative movement and maybe one or two promotions from within where, you know, the jobs suddenly dry up? It wouldn't be stunning if he ended up slipping. So, yeah, that's just, his stock is hard to read right now because he doesn't have super physical traits. We're going to the combine, and, you know, that's a little bit of a showcase for that. You know, there's a sort of question about what Deion's influence is, and I think that most people have come away with really positive impressions when they meet him. They think he's a grounded guy. His game shows some maturity to it, but you still have to answer some of those questions.
You mentioned Kellen Moore's press conference. Definitely wasn't committal on quarterback Derek Carr. Said glowing things, though, about Taysom Hill, Alvin Kamara. Just curious, yeah, though, as a whole, what did you think about the hire for the Saints here? I know he's got a ton of work to do to clean up the situation in New Orleans. But overall, the coach, Kellen Moore, what do you think he brings to the black and gold?
Well, my first personal interaction with him was doing a story on him and some people when he was the backup quarterback, and he was, you know, on the coaching staff at the time. It started with a story about he at one point was the last left-handed quarterback to throw a touchdown. Now, two has come into the league and other guys, but we went like 3 or 4 years. So it started with me doing a story about that. And then while I was down there talking to other people, everybody said, "You realize you're talking to a future NFL head coach here." And I was like, you know, sometimes you hear stuff like that and you kind of, you know, in the back of your mind, roll your eyes a little bit. But you heard it from different people, and obviously his dad having, you know, a legendary high school resume and sort of growing up in that environment, football family, right? Kirby doing good things at Mizzou and, you know, the whole bit. I mean, this is in their blood. It made sense. You know, this wasn't just sort of people saying that for a good quote in a story. And, you know, you saw his fast ascension through the ranks, and obviously the difference he and Vic Fangio made as coordinators for that Eagles team. They were no less talented last year. Obviously they made some sharp moves in offseason, but everything like that. But, yeah, I feel like his presence obviously took them to a different level, even with, you know, Saquon added and things like that. But, you know, he seems sort of built for the job, and this is going to be a tough test, even in a division where you can, you know, maybe steal some games and be competitive.
Yeah, and obviously the news that came out today that they're hiring Brandon Staley as defensive coordinator. I think any time you hire a former head coach on your staff, it's going to, you know, draw some attention. You know, Brandon, they obviously work together with the Chargers. It's kind of fascinating when you look at a situation where, hey, I'm the head coach and I'm hiring you as my offensive coordinator. 2 years later, you're the head coach and you're hiring me as your defensive coordinator. You know, Doug Nussmeier is also on that staff as well, has been following Kellen around. He was also on that Chargers staff. Brendan Nugent from that Chargers staff is coming over. So a lot of familiarity with those names. Just curious, what are your thoughts on Brandon Staley as a defensive coordinator in the NFL?
Yeah, obviously, you know, his head coaching tenure, you know, had some rough moments to it and everything. But, you know, there was real optimism when he started there. And I think there was some real energy there. And nobody doubts his credentials as a defensive mind. And, you know, I think, you know, we've seen it before where a hot coordinator, offensive or defensive, gets elevated to that position. They get thrown into the head coaching job. They stumble. And it takes, like, sometimes 5 years. Sometimes those car washes can be a little faster, but sometimes these guys have their reputation hit a little bit, even if they're no less a coach than they were before. You know, even if that, they might be better going through those experiences and getting humbled a little bit and taking a step back and what do I need to do better and how do I, you know, improve on this. So, like, people I know who have talked to him say this is still a good football coach who, you know, deserves to be in one of these positions in the NFL. So, yeah, it was one of those moves that everybody kind of called right away. It made sense, and yeah, I think they're building a little camaraderie and a little chemistry on that staff, as you said.
Eric, looking at the combine that's going to be starting up next week, we all know the studs that are, you know, the big names in this draft, but there's always those guys that end up performing well in whatever, you know, aspects of the game that they're, you know, going through on the field at the combine. And then, you know, they've got to go through the interview process as well. But what are some of the guys you think that maybe not so much the main focus on the radar right now that have a really big chance to boost their draft stock going into that NFL combine we're going to hear a lot about next week?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's anyone that's gonna beat Xavier Worthy this year. I'm pretty sure there's not. You know, we may not have that kind of a performance. It's more going to be about the explosiveness. This is what I suspect of the defensive line group, and that's both the interior guys, how well they move for their size, and then also the edge guys. And I think those are two positions, just from my vantage point, that, you know, Saints fans may want to consider, just given who might be cut and, you know, what's left over and how you put a team together. It's, you know, the lines of scrimmage. So I think those are two spots that, you know, once the dust clears, the Saints can look at. And I think it's going to be a spot that we'll be talking about next week quite a bit. Abdul Carter, obviously, probably out of range for the Saints, but he's kind of leading that group. And the fascinating name, and somebody who could be in play maybe in New Orleans, just sort of throwing it out there, but Jalen Walker from Georgia is just an explosive, you know, like shot out of a missile kind of pass rusher and pursuer. He plays off the ball, but I, you know, when you see how he attacks the quarterback, it's hard not to think he's going to have that ability in the NFL and be featured in some way. I mean, he's a special defensive talent, but you have to have the right scheme and the right coordinator to use them correctly. But I think he's going to put on a show. The whole Georgia crew might, actually, and Shamar Stewart from A&M. You know, but Mikel Williams is the other Georgia guy. I think he's going to work out well. James Pierce from Tennessee as well. So, yeah, that's a big group on the edge. And then on the interior, I think also there's a few guys that really kind of stand out. Mason Graham is not going to be the best athlete. He's just the best player there. Maybe in range for New Orleans, but also some big guys from Michigan. Kenneth Grant, he's a freak at 340 pounds. Walter Nolan from Ole Miss. You know, these are players who are all reasonably possible in the top 10 with a great workout. Derek Harmon. So, yeah, I think the D-line and the edge group is really going to be the big takeaway from this event, but also, you know, Travis Hunter and a few other fascinating stories, quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, and you mentioned most of the names there, like I was going through mock drafts today, and a lot of people have edge rusher going to the Saints at 9, but it's everyone has a different name, and it's funny to see, you know, Nick Skousen, Shamar Stewart, Mikel Williams, Jalen Walker. You know, all four of those guys, you know, two, they're from Texas A&M, Georgia, but like, okay, one of them's a top 10, maybe not. One of them's top 10, maybe not. A guy that I've seen pop up a few times, and I don't know if people are as familiar with him as they should be, because he went to Marshall, is Mike Green. I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on Mike Green as a prospect? Because, you know, I think he's going to get held back a little by just, you know, the thundering herd of it all, but I think anyone who watches him play is like, oh, this is a elite pass rush prospect.
Yeah, I would say the way I would describe him, a little bit of a stretch, but he's the Quinyon Mitchell of pass rushers, meaning, you know, we saw Mitchell slip in the draft last year, a MAC guy, had a phenomenal Senior Bowl, tested exactly how you'd want it, looks the part, the tape is great, you know, should have been one of the easiest prospects to grade last year. Instead, they let him go all the way down to Philly at, what, 22 or whatever it was. I can't remember now. But, you know, that looking back, that was ridiculous. I felt like he was a top 15 pick all day, just like I'm starting to think that Mike Green is in that same range too. Okay? Having watched him in Mobile, he had some dominant reps. And there was some question about the length. You know, he's more of a broader guy than he is long. So interesting sort of body composition, but boy, he's got the pop and also the kind of the juice too. And, you know, he gave it to Josh Connerly, possible, you know, top 40 pick offensive tackle. He worked the Arizona kid, who's another in that same range too, and just had a great week and said, all right, I'm pretty good with my draft stock, I'm out of here. So, yeah, I think he's definitely one of those candidates to be in that, you know, back end of the top 10, early, you know, top 15, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, that was my favorite thing about the combine is he went out there, blew up Josh Connerly, and like George Costanza, like, I'm going, I'm done. I'm leaving on a high note. So the last year, and this has kind of become a trend where a lot of the top prospects kind of bow out of the workouts, or at least we saw that last year with a lot of names. You know, Marvin Harrison Jr. didn't work out. A lot of the quarterbacks. Is that going to be a thing? Are we going to get to next week and be like, oh, what did he do? I didn't work out. You know, with all these guys, or was that kind of a one off? What is your kind of read on that?
Talking to some agents last 4 or 5 days, there are definitely I've heard names from other agents, so I'm not going to just spout the big one, you know, but the talk is that there are some very recognizable names, you know, even the amateur draft folks and the people who are just kind of getting into the process will recognize. So if that's a pretty big hint right there, who aren't going to run 40 yard dashes or aren't going to do this or that. So I think unfortunately the trend will continue. I mean, I say that as knowing that it's one small element of the entire draft process, right? It also makes for great TV. You know, what was worthy? I mean, last year was epic, but we understand that each prospect has their own decision, their own path, their own, you know, choices they make as far as how they handle it, and that's fine. You know, that's going to be how they want to do it. Not my call to make, but yeah, I think there's going to be some guys skipping some of that stuff, and you know, we'll see if it's as big as last year was or if it's sort of on the same level as that. And then if it's trending in the wrong direction, you know, that's when people start getting worried about the event and start asking big questions about what is the future of the combine.
Yeah, and it certainly didn't hurt the draft prospects for Marvin Harrison or Jaden Daniels or any of those guys. So, yeah.
Did okay for themselves, yep.
Eric, definitely appreciate you carving out some time for us on a Friday. Thank you, man.
All right, guys. Take it easy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Eric.
Eric Edholm, lead draft writer for NFL Media. Got the combine cranking up starting Thursday in Indianapolis. The underwear Olympics, as some people like to term them. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, break more down of the LSU matchup at Omaha, see where that's at, and take your calls here on the Oaken Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. Be right back after this on WWL. Sports Talk going till 7 o'clock this Friday as we get ready for some Pelicans basketball. They're taking on the Mavericks in Dallas this evening. Pre-game coverage starts at 7. It's a 7:30 tip-off on WWL AM and FM. Going on right now on the Bet 92.9 FM and 1350 AM, you got the LSU Tigers baseball team taking on Omaha. It is a 4-0 lead for the Tigers right now, top of the sixth inning. And we were talking about a little off-air. Charlie and I were saying Cade Anderson cruising right now. 5 1/3 innings, allowed one hit. He struck out 8 in the 19 batters that he's faced so far. So keep it going, Cade Anderson, as we get this. We've been boasting about this Tigers pitching staff this season. It's been impressive, and I know the competition hasn't been top tier yet, but that'll step up soon enough. It's nice to get, I guess, these kind of preseason games in for LSU baseball right now.
Yeah, they're tune-up games, right? Like, as long as you win them, it doesn't matter what you really look like. Obviously, you want to win them and look good while you're doing it, but it's like you can't lose to Omaha, right? If you want to be taken seriously once you get into SEC play. But talk about taken seriously. This is one that I'll talk to you about because you grew up watching the Yankees, right?
Oh, yeah. I know where you're going. You know, that was all the buzz today.
I'll never forget, because I grew up watching the Red Sox, and the Red Sox were always like the lovable losers. They grew the beards. They looked, you know, a lot of them looked homeless half the time. I will never forget Johnny Damon, who looked like a caveman.
Absolutely.
And on the Red Sox in center field, the long hair and the beard, and then he went to the Yankees, and suddenly he's clean-shaven. Like, who is that guy? After 49 years, the Yankees have decided to allow their players to grow beards. And cool. I have to imagine it's still going to be like, okay, this little tiny, like, you know, it has to be clean. You know, they're not going to let him just go nuts.
Their GM, Brian Cashman, did make a statement. He doesn't want to see Duck Dynasty beards.
Yeah, as someone who always has a beard, I can appreciate, like, if I had to choose, if I was choosing between two jobs, and
pay's the same.
Pay was the same, you know, maybe one's at a bigger market, and one was like, you have to shave every day. You have to put a blade on your face and be miserable. You'll look younger, but you'll definitely look more out of shape. And then the other one was like, you do whatever you want. I'd go to that one.
Yeah, I'm glad that this is something that's been rescinded now from the Yankees front office, because they've allowed mustaches, but for some reason the rest of facial hair is not allowed.
I am glad, because it means that we will have fewer creepy-looking mustaches in the game of baseball, because no one needs that. I don't need a mustache, but for whatever reason, like, a lot of these players would grow mustaches because they just wanted to exercise some agency over the hair on their face, and that's the only way they could do it. But they always look weird. Mustaches are rough, guys. Like, maybe like one out of every 10 men can pull off a mustache successfully, but there was more than that on the Yankees trying to pull off a mustache. So that's my take. Because I am one of those, like, I have a beard. If I shave it down to a mustache, people,
you're like, who's this guy?
Kids are going to keep the kids away, because I'm going to look weird. You know?
Well, finally the Yankees, yes, have caught up with the society, and they're not, you know, saying you can't have facial hair anymore. We'll see how that turns out this season. I've seen some funny pictures coming out of what, like, an Aaron Judge might look like, or a Giancarlo Stanton. There's even been Derek Jeter with a beard. So it's been people been having fun with it today.
It's Friday.
Yeah, exactly. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll be back with more of it right after this. Stay tuned and don't shave right after this. Well, well, well. Things getting a little interesting at Alec Box Stadium. LSU now up 4-1, but the bases are loaded right now for Omaha. Cade Anderson has been chased from the game. He had 5 1/3 innings pitch, ended up giving up one run, walk two with 8 strikeouts, hit one batter.
Cut him.
has an ERA of 1.74.
It's over. Call it in.
We're going to take a break. When we get back next hour, we'll get into some NBA talk with our Odyssey Sports NBA insider, Nick Friedel. Talk a little Pels and the rest of the league. And get ready for the weekend as well, folks. Want to hear from you, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talking text line. Taking a break for the top of the hour news, and we'll be right back after that. Stay tuned on this chilly Friday. Yes, indeed. Back on our Friday, February 21st edition of Sports Talk, getting ready for Pelicans basketball. Coverage starts 7 o'clock, 7:30 tip-off in Dallas this evening. And you think the Pels are shorthanded. Man, oh man, you look at that Dallas roster. They are wiped out, especially their big men.
Yeah, I felt good about it. I actually thought the Anthony Davis deal was going to be fun for them for like 5 minutes, and then it turns out, nope. Because you just got that version of Anthony Davis, the one that never plays.
Street clothes.
Yeah. But, you know, I fully expect Kyrie Irving to go off for like 60. Like, that is one thing. Like, Kyrie's head case in general, he is one of the most entertaining basketball players to watch on the planet. Like, there's a reason that other NBA players always vote like Kyrie Irving is one of the most talented NBA players, because it's like they appreciate the things that he does are just weird. So, you watch a game where they don't have any big men, and it's like, oh, so we're just going to get do-it-all Kyrie? All right, that's actually worth watching on its own, even when the Pelicans lose by 30.
I'm hoping we get to see Zion Williamson put on a show today. That'd since be nice. Aren't those bigs around. Hopefully he can get 40 points for the Pels. They're going to need it tonight.
He's going to shoot 40 free throws probably, because that's the only way they're going to be able to stop him is by literally tackling him in the lane.
And curious to see now, too, coming off this All-Star break, will the Pels ramp up his minutes at all, because he's been on that restriction for a while now?
Probably not. Like, I
know. What's the point of trying to win?
Why
I
do
get
you benefit
it.
At this point, you're just trying to make sure, like, okay, he's still in good shape. Like, I feel like the minutes restriction is funny, because I don't think he even needs it. I think at this point it's just sensible, right? Like, you have 27 games left, and the only thing that can go wrong from here that hasn't already gone wrong is guys, you know, DeJounte Murray tears his Achilles.
Herb Jones got an injury, right?
Yeah, I mean, Herb Jones, I mean, he basically lost his entire season. What, he played in like 5 games total? We'll see. I think this is all building towards next year, the Cooper Flag season.
It's just tough to...
And yes, I'm a big Cooper Flag fan.
It's tough to stomach the lost season, I guess.
Yeah, that's why I'm into college basketball, man. Watch Auburn, Arkansas the other night. It is weird seeing John Calipari. Every time, I always forget. I'm like, oh, it's Eric Musselman's not there anymore. Now it's John Calipari wearing those weird red blazers. Do you think he had a red blazer already, or he went to the red blazer store and just got like 30 of them?
Oh, he definitely went to the red blazer store. Yeah, he wasn't having those beforehand at Kentucky.
I don't know. He's coached a lot of teams. He used to coach at UMass. Maybe he broke out the UMass gear.
He might maybe still fit him, right?
Yeah, get a UMass. Yeah, he probably didn't fit. He probably had to get him tailored. but no, I haven't watched a ton of Auburn. And I know I hijacked this NBA conversation with a college conversation. I wasn't that impressed. That's the number one team in the country. And I was like, this is a beatable. Like, there is no dominant college basketball team this year. Like, the NCAA tournament is going to be fun. Because you're going to get, like, I mean, like UConn. I've watched a lot of UConn. They're going to be like an 8 seed. And I still feel good about it. I still feel like they could run the table as an 8 seed. Cause
sure,
there's
you know,
no,
they're tested.
Like last year, it was basically UConn-Purdue the entire way. And you're like, all right, if any other team gets there, it'll be a massive upset, right? And it ended up being UConn-Purdue in the championship. And it, as it turned out, UConn was way better than Purdue. There is not a single team in college basketball that is even close to as dominant as either of those teams were last year. There's no big man like Zach Edey that you're like looking at like, oh gosh, how are you going to defend him? You know, it's just a lot of really competitive teams, you know, and I think college basketball has benefited from the transfer portal more than any other sport, because what you ended up getting is like all these teams with sixth year, you know, veteran programs. Like John L. Davis is on Arkansas now. He was on Florida Atlantic when they went to the Final Four, right? So he's just there. And it's like, oh, okay. Now I don't think Arkansas is going to make the tournament. But, I mean, they had Auburn, I wouldn't say on the ropes, but they had a lead against Auburn with like 3 minutes left in that game. Like they took him down to the wire in Auburn. So I don't know. All this is to say I think the SEC is overrated in general. They're going to get like 12 tournament teams in. I think half of them are going to be gone by the first weekend. Auburn's going to make it to the Elite Eight. I don't think they are a championship team. Alabama's good, not great. I actually think Kentucky is the best team in the SEC. So if you're filling out your brackets, that is my endorsement. Is I think Kentucky is going to be an Elite Eight team, and I think they could be the kind of like, I don't want to say surprise Final Four team because they're Kentucky.
Sure.
But I think Kentucky could win the whole thing.
When you look at the struggles of the LSU men's basketball team, but you hear...
Oh, that's right. LSU exists.
You're hearing, though, they remain committed to Matt McMahon.
You have to.
And you're going to dump more NIL money into the program. Hopefully, they can catch up with the Joneses here, because it'd be nice to have some relevant men's hoops.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just bail on... I mean, you kind of set him up to fail, and he failed, and... You know, it's tough because when you're not devoting enough resources to the program, you're not going to be able to pull these top prospects. And, you know, that's why it's like, you know, I've said this before, like, I wish they could get Will Wade back. They won't. They can't. But, you know, who's going to be in the NCAA tournament again?
Yeah, baby McNeese.
McNeese. I don't know if they're going to win any games. Last year, I made the mistake of thinking, like, oh, they're going to go upset Kansas or whoever they played.
Is this the last year you think Wade, though, sticks around McNeese?
I think he's got to be looking at bigger and better things, right? Like, at a certain point, you know, his name is kind of mud for a while.
Sure.
And so he had to kind of, I mean, Rick Pitino, if Rick Pitino can get no job, and obviously Rick Pitino is a much higher profile name, but he, like, when you weigh, like, the stuff Rick Pitino was doing versus stuff Will Wade was doing, like, Rick Pitino was into way weirder stuff. And you know, he's at St. John's now, and St. John's is ranked. You know, he kind of brought that program back from nothing. I have to imagine Will Wade's going to end up back at a major program not in not too distant future.
We talked a little bit about hockey in this show, and from 1509 on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, you guys need to make sure there is no hockey in NOLA when they should be working on getting back the name Jazz from Utah. Well, I agree with one part of that statement, at least.
What? How would we go about doing that?
How would we do it,
yeah,
right?
What would be our method to making sure no hockey ever arrives here? Should we go out and, like, you know... You know,
our deep pockets not investing.
Yeah. That's you know, yeah. It's true. If I'm not into it, it's not going to happen. You know, if I don't endorse it, they will not show up here. I mean, it's not happening. Let's be real. There's not going to be a hockey team in New Orleans. We can't support a basketball team. How are we gonna get a hockey team in here?
I would love to see it though. I mean, I can dream.
I guess I don't know. Like, do people really want to go be cold in a hockey arena? You're going to have to renovate the Smoothie King Center, add ice under the floor. Like, are we going to do that? I don't think so. I just don't see it.
It could use an upgrade.
What I will say is, you know, it's not just a cold weather sport anymore. Like, there's a lot of warm weather. Like the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, won, like, what, two titles in a row?
Yeah.
Like, Florida Panthers are up there. The Vegas Golden Knights are, you know,
winning
titles.
They were an
titles.
Expansion team and did well.
You know, so it's not like they can't exist in this part of the country. But I think I saw, like, the Louisiana has like fewer than 200 like registered hockey players. It's like the second fewest in the country next to Mississippi, which would be the other state that you'd be like, oh, they're going to come and support.
We're an untapped resource right here. They don't even know about.
They just don't pay attention to hockey down here. Like, I don't know. I don't see it.
We'll get back more into our NBA talk after the break. Odyssey NBA insider Nick Friedel will join us, one of our favorites on this program, right after this on WWL. We are chilling on this frigid Friday here on Sports Talk, and happy to welcome in on the line with us NBA Sports Insider for Odyssey, Nick Friedel. Insider Calls brought to you by Hyundai. Now you can buy a new Hyundai at Amazon. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Nick, thanks as always for your time. How you been doing, man?
Guys, it is great to be with you. Yeah, the All-Star break is good. I'm actually out in San Francisco right now. I still can't believe that the Warriors actually landed Jimmy Butler, but I'm trying to get over what we all watched on Sunday, because that All-Star game, man, I used to wake up on All-Star weekend on Sunday and be like, hey, this is going to be pretty cool. And now to see what it has become.
Yeah, you saw the NHL stealing a ton of thunder after what they got to go through with their tournament. Do you have any kind of ideas for a fix what the NBA can do for All-Star weekend?
Sadly, I don't think there is a major one. I really don't. And I say that as somebody who's loved the league my whole life. It has gotten to a point now where we all know that they're just not trying in right. that game. And there are moments, certainly, at the end of a handful of games over the last 10 or 15 years where it was fun and it was exciting and you thought, all right, well, maybe this will translate into next year and maybe this will be the start of something new. It's just not. So I know there are some people that say, okay, well, U.S. versus the world, and that might be fun as a one-off, but these guys all see what it's become. And so you can split them up any way you want. You can't make somebody try hard if they don't really want to try hard and be out there. And the name recognition that comes with being an All-Star is much better than actually being in the game. It's really sad because it's such a marquee event for the league still, and it makes the NBA so much money. But I really don't see it as a fix. But I say that also realizing full well it's not going anywhere either. So they're going to try more stuff, but I just don't think it's going to matter.
Hey, they could take a page out of the NFL's book and like play dodgeball or something. Maybe that would get some more entertainment value.
You never know. You never know.
Speaking of someone who was at the All-Star game and suddenly is in the headlines for completely different reasons, Victor Wembanyama he's dealing with deep vein thrombosis. He's done for the year. It's a scary thing. Brandon Ingram went through it. A few years ago, Chris Bosh had a similar issue. He had to retire early because of it. What can you just kind of give us the lowdown on what's going on with Vic?
I think the biggest issue for Wembanyama in the moment and the reason why they shut him down for the year is, as far as I can tell, guys, you can't be on a blood thinner and play, because if something were to happen, and something catastrophic were to occur on the floor, you just can't have that situation play out for the league. So as far as what we've heard, it does sound like the Spurs think he's going to be okay. He'll be ready to go next year. But again, and this is from a broader league standpoint, but this is the sad part. We're sitting here talking about the All-Star game, and Wembanyama actually really played hard. You could see him out there. He was winded. He was trying to get everybody else around him to set a different tone. So many people in the league wanted him to be one of the new faces of the league. And when you have to sit somebody out for an injury for a couple months, that just stops the momentum that might have been there already. So one more time for the NBA, they've got to find a different answer. The problem is that we just don't know who that answer may be as another face. But in the short term, it's a real setback for everybody involved. You just hope for Wembanyama's case that he responds to the treatment and that he's back out there, because he really is a one-of-one type player. We just have never seen somebody like him, and it was very obvious, especially on the defensive end, that he was coming into his own the more games he played.
Mentioned briefly there, Brandon Ingram, obviously the trade for the Pelicans was a necessity, something they had to do. Overall, though, what did you think about the haul they did get in return for B.I.?
About what you would expect
right.
when you just don't want to pay a guy moving forward. And you don't want to give him that max extension that he was looking for. I mean, if you're the Pelicans, it was so obvious, guys, in the last year and a half, 2 years, that they really liked Ingram, but did they want to build around him and pay him what it took? I never got that sense. And so when you make that move and you get back what they did, you know, okay, I guess it's kind of one of those deals where you know you're not going to keep him. You know you don't want to be financially stuck to that new deal. Well, so you have to do what you have to do. But when you're making those kind of moves, the hard part for any team is everybody else knows you're making those kind of moves in the league. The return was what it was, but I don't think anybody is running down the doors to praise the Pelicans for that one, except for they got off the money that was coming his way.
Yeah, they got something, right? Like, I think
exactly.
That was what people were worried about, is he was just going to walk away and you were going to get nothing out of it. So, hey, I think it's a top four protected pick. You know, you can at least say, you know, we made out what we made out with, and we're moving forward. Whatever that looks like, you could lose your final 27 games. I don't think anyone would be mad about it. I think people might be happy about it because it probably means you're getting Cooper Flagg into the building. But hey, that is what it is. You know, game going on right now. Cavs and Knicks. Javonte Green, Pelicans waived him. Looks like he's going to sign with the Cavs. So it's an interesting place for him to go, because I think the Cavs, if you're looking at the East, they're the number one team now. You know, I grew up in the North, so I'm a big Celtics guy, and I kind of feel like the Celtics are just kind of lying there in wait, like, yeah, okay, we're going to win however many games we win, and then we're going to get to the playoffs, we're going to start playing defense again, and y'all are going to lose. But, you know, what are your thoughts on the Cavs? And obviously they're playing the Knicks, and the Knicks are the 3 seed. They're going to be the other team in the mix. Do you think the Cavs are a legitimate threat to win a title this year? It seems like they are structured the way you need to be structured, with, you know, the stars, the scorers, the bigs, the depth, to really give it a legit shot.
I don't believe in the Cavs, not as legit title contenders. And I might be flatly wrong on that, guys, a few more months from now, because Kenny Atkinson and that staff have done an unbelievable job getting that team prepared for what continues to come their way. I mean, they're just knocking off everybody that they face, it seems, night by night. But when you're a young team trying to come together in the postseason, I've always believed that it takes at least a couple years for you to really find your way. And I really like Donovan Mitchell. I think he's a solid player, but I don't think he is better than the top of that Celtics group, and they just did it a year ago. So there is that muscle memory of, all right, we're back in the playoffs. We know how good we are, and we want to repeat. So I would be really surprised if Cleveland got all the way through the East. I just think Boston is a better team. Cleveland might be a better story, but until they show it in the postseason, I'm not buying their stock long term.
Yeah, and the thing about the Celtics is it's easy to look at them now and be like, oh, yeah, they're the best team. But, like, one of the reasons I feel like that way is because they've gone – you know, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, it feels like they've lived in the Eastern Conference Finals over their entire career. It's honestly insane to look at how many playoff games that duo has been in, and they're only in, like, their mid-20s. And I think that's what you're kind of talking about there is, you know, the Cavs haven't had those learning experiences. Like, they might break through the way the Celtics did – a few years back and weren't ready to take down the Warriors, but I think that learning in the playoffs is an entirely different story to being able to win 50-plus games in the regular season, because it's a completely different game in the playoffs.
That's exactly right. And when you watch through time, rare is the team that gets in there and can really break through. I mean, a couple years ago, guys, everybody thought, all right, Cleveland's got a nice young group. Let's see how they do, and remember they lost to the Knicks in the first round. And last year, they see a very young Magic team. It's kind of the same theme, who'd never been there before, and they just get by them in seven games. So they've had a few moments together now. I just don't believe that, like, the Darius Garlands of the world could take their game to some different point than what we've seen in the postseason. I also think, like any team, it seems, in the last few years that has tried, there is a little bit of a hangover that comes after you win. That young group of the Celtics with Tatum and Brown, for so long, can they do it? Are they going to do it? Can they actually break through? They lost to the Warriors a few years back. All they did was turn the ball over in the finals, and they would have won that one. Well, they finally did, and I think there was so much relief baked in that they went, okay, let's just get through this regular season, go through the motions a little bit, and then get to the playoffs. We're going to see what happens here in a couple months, but to me, in the East, it's Boston and everybody else.
Insider calls are brought to you by Hyundai. Now you can buy a new Hyundai from the comfort of your new home at Amazon. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details.
Nick, I'm going to hop in here and ask you about the Phoenix Suns. The Pelicans have a couple games with them next week, and Phoenix is just kind of collapsing right now. They're 1-7 in February, four straight losses, but and it's not even like the recent losses are just some better teams like Denver and Memphis and Houston, but they've also picked up losses to San Antonio, back-to-back losses to Portland in that stretch. The only game that they've won was against Utah, and that was an overtime victory, and it just feels like they've kind of fallen apart in Coach Budenholzer's first year. They're now 26-29 overall. They're 11th in the Western Conference, and when you have the star power of Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, I think it's kind of surprising to see how they've kind of collapsed in early February, at least.
It's really surprising for all the moves that Matt Ishbia made, the new owner out there in Phoenix, thinking, oh, I got this. Let me just trade 100 draft picks back to Brooklyn. Let me make some other moves. Ah, no problem. We'll take Beal and all his money. Well, guess what? None of it has worked. You bump out Frank Vogel, and here comes Budenholzer. Oh, we'll change it up. Budenholzer knows what to do offensively. Nope, that didn't work either. So it is very difficult to put together a winning team that can win consistently in the league. Guys, Phoenix has got to be the single biggest disappointment to me that there is going, because Kevin Durant, while he may not be the same player he was a few years ago, is still unbelievably awesome. And Booker is still a very, very good player. For those two to be at the top of a team that is kind of fading away here, who may not even get into the play-in, that is a sad state of affairs. And I think the next step in the conversation about Phoenix is what happens to KD this summer. Because we saw the rumors about trades. In fact, a lot of them had him coming out here to San Francisco. And was he going to end up being the guy that helped save the Warriors? There's no way he can sit in Phoenix really believing that they can win on any kind of high level. If they don't make the playoffs, play in, whatever, that will be the next storyline that appears for the Suns.
Watching hoops here this season with the Pelicans, you know it's been brutal for us, just the injuries, inconsistencies. Play the guessing game every other day. Is Zion going to play or not? At this point, it's hard to even, you know, say it matters what goes on with his conditioning, just as long as he's ready for next year and healthy. For the final 27 games, what should we be looking for? Is it really just more development out of Trey Murphy and the rookie Yves Missi?
It really is. And those are the two names, the bright spots that I know we've talked about throughout the season. And you've got to feel good about them in the moment. But, guys, when you have – we're talking about a disappointment in the Suns. I just feel so bad for all the good people in New Orleans, because I know people do care about that team, and they were so excited to see what it's become. I mean, you know, you got to figure, all right, Willie Green, what happened to the front office? You've got all these different questions that they have to figure out off the floor. So it feels like, at least to me, all the stuff on the floor is kind of secondary until you figure out moving forward. I mean, on top of the younger guys, all these years later, however many years it's been since he got into the league from Duke at this point, I'm still watching Zion thinking, okay, well, can you string together enough games that we give anybody hope that going into next year that anything's really going to be different? So there's
not a lot to like, but the reality is they have been a mess for a little while now.
Nick, man, it's always good talking to you. Definitely appreciate the time, and enjoy whatever you got going on in hoops for you tonight, and be talking to you soon.
Always enjoy being on with you guys. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Nick.
That was Odyssey Sports NBA Insider Nick Friedell. Insider calls brought to you by Hyundai. Now you can buy a new Hyundai at Amazon. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Taking a break. We'll be right back giving you an LSU baseball update right after this on WWL. We are mid-eighth inning at Alec Box Stadium. The LSU Tigers up 4-2 currently over Omaha. Tomorrow's game, there's going to be a doubleheader due to bad weather on Sunday. They bumped up game two to both be played on the Saturday slate. So tomorrow at noon, pregame 11:30 on the Bet 92.9 FM and 1350 AM. You can catch game two. Game three starts at 5 o'clock, but we won't have that game for you because we've got LSU basketball tomorrow on the LSU feed. Tigers are taking on Florida in the Maverick Center. That's a pregame of 4:30, tip-off at 5 p.m., and the LSU men's basketball game is on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. In a rough go, we talked about the LSU men's squad of this season, but the LSU women still having success. I know they've had some tough goes against the better teams in the league, but Kim Mulkey's squad at least will be making the dance this year again, and hopefully can, you know, make some noise and maybe have some kind of magic happen where they get back another national championship with Miss Mulkey leading the way.
Yeah, it is funny because you look at like the LSU women and we're like, yeah, they haven't had a great season, right? They're only 26-2.
Right, exactly.
You know, like that's kind of where you're at. But no, I mean, it's, you know, women's college basketball is funny because it, like I was talking about with the men, right? I feel like you could look at it and say, hey, there's like 20 teams that could potentially make the Final Four, right? In the women's game, it's maybe like 8. Like, there's teams that could go upset somebody or win a game, but
sure,
when it comes
yeah.
down to it, there's maybe 8 that are legit Final Four contenders. Like, you almost never see a Final Four team in the women's game that's, like, beyond, like, a 3 seed. And even then, that's like, oh, okay. And the question becomes, are you in that 8?
Right.
Like, are you within that bubble of, like, a legitimate contender? I think LSU is, but there's always that South Carolina demon that I just, like every team, like even UConn, the UConn women's team, they were so good for so long. Tennessee was always that team for them that it was like, I think they're going to lose to Tennessee. Then when Pat Summitt retired, it became Notre Dame and Skylar Diggins and, you know, Baylor was part of that too. And it's just like, there's every team has that like one foil that they just cannot get over. And even just like, then the longer it goes on, the more mental it becomes of like, I don't even know if South Carolina is markedly better than LSU, but I still don't think LSU's going to win when they play. This is kind of the waiting game. It's almost like I think the women's game is closer to the NBA in that we know who's going to be there in the end. We just kind of got to get to that point. And I fully expect LSU to be in the Final Four. I don't know if they can win a title this year, but I think they're going to make it.
Just 3 games left in the regular season for the Lady Tigers. They got Kentucky.
Well, we're getting there. It's almost March Madness time, baby.
Yeah, Kentucky, Alabama, and Ole Miss left on the women's slate. And then, of course, the SEC tournament.
Yeah, so that's every March we get to it. And, you know, me and Anthony Davis celebrate our birthday. We have the same birthday, in case you were wondering. And then I get to watch college basketball games nonstop. Because there's really no NFL news going on. It's kind of the
dead period, right?
And so I watch way too much college basketball. It's my favorite time of the year.
I love the story that came out years ago that seeing that's when March Madness occurs is when it's the time for men to get vasectomies, that it goes up because you sit at home and just sit on the couch, you know, with a, you know, frozen peas on your groin.
So you're saying that it's a good time because you're going to be sitting around doing nothing anyway.
Right.
I took that the other way, which was that watching college basketball seems to encourage people to get vasectomies.
No, it's like, what better time than sit on the couch at home just, you know, to watch March Madness? So I might as well go get my vasectomy now.
That makes more sense than what I was thinking. Because I was like, something about college basketball just spurs that action. Like, it's got to happen. It's got, like, maybe you're losing bets. Maybe that's like the, you know, whoever comes in last in the bracket pool have to get that done. I don't
fantasy,
know.
Fantasy, like, punishment.
This conversation
kind of thing, right?
Took a weird turn.
Well, we'll get back on track. We'll take a break and try to, you know, put a bow on things as we send things off to Pelicans basketball coming up 7 o'clock pregame coverage, 7:30 tip-off on WWL. We'll take a break right now, though, and refocus to close out on the right note here on WWL. Closing out our Friday edition of Sports Talk here on WWL, bottom of the eighth inning in Alec Box Stadium, LSU up 4-2 over Omaha. The big news today, though, the Saints getting another addition on their coaching staff. Brandon Staley in the mix as defensive coordinator. And now I guess it's going to be the next news will be him and Kellen getting together to fill out the rest of that defensive staff going into next week's NFL Combine. So things look to be pretty set in place for the team, for the most part at least, going into, you know, checking out all these prospects in Indianapolis.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, yeah, filling out the coaching staff's important. I would imagine Brandon Staley has a short list of names of guys that he'd want to work with, and I'm sure they kind of combine on that and figure it out. But biggest question to me is, okay, exactly what scheme is Brandon Staley going to bring in here? Because, you know, I've watched some of the Chargers' defenses, and it's tough because it's like, okay, every defensive coordinator, I think, has their scheme, but then you're going to adapt it to certain players. Right, so how much of what he was doing with the Rams, with the Chargers, was based on personnel versus rigid, hey, this is what we do type situations? Because if that's what it is, he's going to come in here and you're going to have to make some roster changes, and I don't know if you have the flexibility to do that.
Right.
Or at least not as much as you probably want to in year one. So I think he's probably going to have to adapt what he wants to do to who is in the building, and so I think that's part of the conversation. But that's – and then you're going to go into the combine, and you're going to try to find, okay, what do we need? What are the musts? You know, they're going to put that word cloud up there with all the red magnets, and it's going to be a lot of red magnets with must on the defensive side of the ball. So
a whole bunch of them, right.
All that is to say, you got 9 draft picks. What's the over-under on if you make all 9 picks, how many defensive players – are in that pool? Because I would say 6.5 is my over-under. Because I think you're getting at least 6 defensive players out of those 9. If you make 9 picks.
You don't think with an offensive coach taking over, head coach taking over, that he's not going to want to address that side of the ball?
No, because I'm the offensive guy. I can make it work. Like Sean Payton, there's a reason you drafted all these defensive ends with Sean Payton. It was actually pretty rare that you went first round, like heavy offense with Sean Payton. You were getting defensive players in a majority of the time. Because as an offensive coach, I think Sean Payton was like, I don't need you to draft me a first-round receiver. I can go find a receiver and turn him into something. Give me the second-rounders, the third-rounders. Whereas I want plug-and-play defensive players. And it was the opposite with Dennis Allen. He wanted plug-and-play offensive players. You ended up with Trevor Penning, Chris Olave, all these offensive picks. I think I'm going to go the other way.
Speaking of defensive players, Alante Taylor on Instagram today after the news of Staley, just unleash me. I'm going to make this stuff happen.
My dog says that all the time.
Taking a break for the top of the hour news and heading into Pelicans basketball, folks. Sorry, Pels at Dallas right after this on WWL.